Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing way better than my voice makes it sound as if I'm doing.
You've dropped about an octave, it sounds like.
Well, periodically I drop an octave. And then at other times I'm up in the higher register. So I've got a lot of range here.
But, good.
Yeah, I think it's all on the way out. Just a little lingering laryngitis sort of a thing going on. Yeah.
So you have lots of room for emotional expression there in that voice.
Oh, lots of room. And I have to confess, I was actually hoping that it would hang on until the show because I was fantasizing all week about making a recording. You know, a few old favorites, you know, some standards, and capturing this because it's I've had a lot of fun with it. In fact, my grandson called me, and I said, this was 3 or 4 days ago when it was at its height, and I said, hello. There was a long pause, and he said, grandmother. So
threw him off a little bit.
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's good to keep them on their toes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Never knowing who you are. Who is my grandmother today?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the question we're looking at all the time, huh?
Yes. Or even more directly, who am I today? Well, let's get more specific. Who am I in this moment?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Great. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're on every Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Archives of all our shows are available at sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. And that website has a lot of information about Sherry and where Sherry's doing retreats and workshops and all that kind of stuff. And on that note, Sherry, we have a couple of events coming up at the Mountain View Zen Center.
We do.
We have the Nonviolent Peace Force on Thursday, November 13th. That's in the evening from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that group is?
Yes, this is actually my first in-person introduction to them, but I have a very good friend who is involved with their organization and has arranged for them to come to the Zen Center and talk with us. They are a group started by a Quaker gentleman who lives in the Bay Area. Quakers, you know, are nonviolent.
Yes.
And out of his concern for the violence in the world and his hope to further peace, he started this peace force. And it's kind of like the Peace Corps in that people can volunteer. It's all volunteer as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose to do that, you go and you receive training. And if you're accepted and complete the training, then you receive a small stipend. And what you're trained to do is join a group of people who are called into various countries, parts of the world, where there's conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And this group of people trained in nonviolence assists the conflicting party to come to a peaceful settlement of their dispute.
Uh-huh.
And I think that this is correct, that they, in the last year, now they may be in other places by now, but this was the one I heard of, were invited into Sri Lanka. Apparently, that country has been in a civil war kind of situation for many, many years, and the government actually invited them in to try to assist in a peaceful settlement.
Wow.
Yeah, so people can come and learn about the movement and, who knows, perhaps decide that that's what one would like to pursue and become involved.
Absolutely. And again, that's Thursday, November 13th from 7 to 9 p.m. And if you'd like more information, Sherry, what would be the best way for people to get in touch?
Well, people could call the Zen Center and leave a message. That number is 650-966-1057. That's all on the website as well.
Yes.
And the guest master there would get back to them. Actually, there's not much more to know than that.
Yes.
We ask if people want to attend just to show up that night. And maybe make a special effort to arrive on? Well, no, it's not a special effort. We always ask people to be on time at the
Absolutely.
Center. Absolutely. Because this is a special guest and who will be beginning a talk, and we would like for there to be as little disruption as possible after that talk begins. So, if it's of interest, just plan on joining us there.
Absolutely.
If you have something along a meditation cushion line or a low folding camp chair, that sort of thing, you might bring it because we might run out of sitting options.
Yes, yes. And Sherry, the weekend before that, you'll be at the same Zen Center leading a workshop there.
Yes.
That's Saturday, November 8th.
Great. And the title of that is?
Creating a Supportive Environment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now that sounds appealing, doesn't it?
Yes, it
Something
does.
Something probably most of us could use.
Absolutely.
So if people haven't been to the Zen Center for one of these workshops, again, we ask you to be on time, definitely to be on time, because once the workshop starts there, generally speaking, we close and lock the door.
Yes.
So by 10 o'clock, you want to be in and in your spot. And you can call ahead to say that you're coming, the same 966-1057 number. Workshop will be from 10 to 4. We'll have a lunch break. If people want to bring a vegetarian sack lunch, they can. Or it's right downtown Mountain View. There are so many restaurants that anybody, I think, could find something that they want to eat. And bring a journal or a notebook, wear comfortable clothing, because we do sit around on the floor a lot, and it's experiential. There will be guided imagery and journaling exercises and group discussion and that sort of thing as we explore what creating that supportive environment for oneself is all about.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. I'll see you there.
I will see you there. Great. Sherry, are there any other announcements you'd like to make?
I don't think so. That's kind of all I have going on currently.
Great.
Yeah.
That's about all I have, too. I'd like to give out our phone number. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call at 650-723-9010. If you prefer to reach us by email, you can send an email to openair@kzsu.org, and we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call. Sherry, I have an email here from one of our listeners in Australia. Who has a question? Dear Sherry, I have a 6-year-old daughter who is very emotional. When she is upset, she screams and cries and throws things. She says, I hate her and I want to get rid of her. That upsets me. If she looks forward to something, say a party, she gets so worked up about it that when it actually happens, she's an emotional wreck and spends most of the time crying. I can see a lot of things that are happening, but the main one I get stuck on is that I assume, because she is only a child, that she is not equal to her life or capable of dealing with her emotions. She needs to be helped, guided, taught. I can see there is an assumption in that she is inadequate and needs to be fixed. As her mother, it is my job to fix her. If I say it that way, then it sounds wrong, but if I say, quote, children need to be socialized, need discipline, need guidance and support, end quote, then that sounds like a commonly accepted role for a parent. So what am I missing here?
Well, one of the things that I heard in that email was something that we often do, which is run a bunch of things together in one sentence with commas.
Yes.
And then it's like they all are the same thing because they're in a sequence with commas.
Yes.
Rather than they often are opposites, sometimes don't have anything to do with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not the same thing that a child needs support and guidance and a child is inadequate to her experience.
Mm-hmm.
But if we put those together then and say, so if I attempt to help, assist, support, guide my child, then I'm giving a message that this child is not equal to his or her experience. And I don't see that. There was another one of those that I can't now recall, but it was putting the... What was the line about socialization?
Uh-huh. If I say it that way, then it sounds wrong. But if I say, quote, children need to be socialized, need discipline, need guidance and support, end quote, then that sounds like a commonly accepted role for a parent.
Right. So guidance, support, And I can't remember, I'm sorry, what the third piece of that was. Guidance, support, and...
Discipline.
And discipline.
Yes.
If we talk about those simply as things that we offer a child to be able to navigate smoothly and safely and increasingly independently around in the world, that's one thing. If we label those behaviors socialization, then that puts a whole different spin on it. Then those very things that we could say are certainly something that every child needs. I know I needed them. I bet you needed them, and I bet you know most of us feel like we still need them.
Yes.
Certainly support and on occasion guidance. And even though now we're responsible for ourselves, so it would be self-discipline. Of course, from our perspective, that whole phrase is compassionate self-discipline.
Absolutely.
There we all are. Socialization. Well, you know, I'm not terribly supportive of the common understanding of socialization, but we do need to be socialized. It's just that, from my perspective, we don't need to be socialized in a way that makes us feel bad about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Children can understand. We all need to understand that, as a society, we have agreed upon certain things. And some of those are really a matter of personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
And others, if you don't abide by them, you could be killed.
Yes.
And so it's really helpful to know what the rules of the game are.
Mm-hmm.
If that gets defined as, we do anything, including making a child fearful or guilty, in order to get that, manipulate that child into doing what we want them to do in the name of socialization, then we're in a completely different area. So one of the things that I would encourage this very thoughtful, obviously kind, concerned mother to do is start sorting out what the voices are telling her about the child, about herself, about her role as a mother, about who the child is and what's going on and what all of this means. Just to try to bring a greater clarity to what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, when I talk to many people know that I've written a book on depression. In fact, that's how I meet an awful lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first questions that they have for me is, so are you saying then that I should just use awareness to deal with my depression, that I shouldn't take antidepressants or see a doctor or any of that sort of thing? And my response is, no, of course that's not what I'm saying, because that would be irresponsible, and I don't like to think of myself as an irresponsible person. My suggestion is, if people are experiencing depression and they want to just take antidepressants, they should do that. Okay? If they don't want to take antidepressants, or they feel that they would like to see if they could live without them, or they have a strong sense that they're a person who could use awareness practice to deal with any situation in their life, then my encouragement is, first of all, do whatever you need to do to become stable. Because
mm-hmm.
It's really hard to practice the kind of awareness that we're talking about when one is suicidal.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So first, we become stable.
Yes.
And then we start bringing in every possible support that we can imagine, or that anybody else can imagine,
mm-hmm.
that we can find out about.
Yes.
So we join every group. We read every book. We talk to everybody we can talk to. Whatever it takes. So years ago, when I had been a smoker of cigarettes for a number of years and wanted to quit, and this was before, living in California meant you don't smoke under any circumstances, no matter what.
Yes.
And quitting was a choice that a few people were making.
Yes.
And I was going through that process of making that choice. Somebody said to me, one of the great difficulties with quitting smoking is that people have an idea that one day they should just quit smoking. They shouldn't deal with any of the issues that brought them to smoking,
mm-hmm.
that are handled through smoking that are going to still be there when one no longer smokes. It's just, I have this whole structure of my life in place, and then I'll just change it all one day, and I'll be fine. Now, of course, it's not going to work that way. So people would say, you know, gosh, I've gained all this weight, or I'm biting my nails, or I'm, you know, biting the heads off of people around me, or whatever it is. Well, of course, because this survival system that most of us are living in and call I doesn't take kindly to people doing things that threaten its survival.
Yes.
And if smoking is a part of my survival system, then even though everybody in the world says it's bad for your health, you're crazy to do it, it makes you smell, gives you bad breath, you know, all of these things, for this survival system, it's a part of my survival. And that survival system does not want to let it go. Now, when all of the needs are taken care of that the smoking those cigarettes is currently meeting, then the desire to smoke those cigarettes can fall away fairly easily. So with this child, my hope and wish is that mom, because the child is only six, is going to be the one who becomes the advocate, who becomes the source of all of the support that is available for somebody who is dealing with what this child is dealing with. And we don't even know what that is.
Yes.
Okay? So we have a label, emotion. So we put that. This child is, I'm sure most people would say, overly emotional. Out of control emotionally.
Yes.
But we actually don't know what's going on. I was just talking with somebody recently who had a child who was labeled so out of control emotionally that he was not allowed to go to school.
Wow.
They went to I don't know where they got this information, but this person put the child on a diet, did tests, took away certain foods, left in certain, added certain foods, and the child, the first, right after that started, didn't have any kind of an emotional reaction for 3 weeks.
Wow. Wow.
I think that, you know, they put heavy drugs in the child's food, but the mother assured me that that was not the case. It's just that whatever was triggering that seemed to have a big nutritional component, and when whatever that was removed or added or however that happened, he wasn't being triggered in the same way. Now, after 3 weeks, we can guess, you know, something happened. You know that old joke about the child who didn't talk until he was like seven? And, of course, people were doing everything and sending him everywhere and having tests and all of these things. And when he started speaking, of course, the first thing they wanted to know was, why did you wait so long to speak? And he said, I didn't have anything to say until now.
Yes.
So there we are. We're assuming that there's one cause,
yes,
and that it is a major problem, and it might be something that we haven't thought of, and it might not be a major problem. So this mother is in a position with the child to be what most of us are in a position to do with ourselves, which is become an expert on this person's situation so as to be able to be a compassionate, conscious presence in this child's life, to truly be able to go beyond her own fears and anxieties and insecurities to become the mentor that this child needs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Sherry, as you were talking there, and you mentioned the mentor there at the end, and the word that came up in my mind is willingness. Finding the willingness to help this child in whatever way I can.
That's right. And, you know, the thing that this child has going that most of us don't is that this parent is really motivated.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's that thing that my teacher said to me when he sent me out to do this work against my will. And he said, you will do for the love of others what you would never be willing to do for yourself.
Yes.
And I project from what this woman has said in her email that she is going to go to places to help this child that she would never go to help herself.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, that's wonderful and sad at the same time. And most of us are there.
Yes.
We'll do it for someone else, someone that we love unconditionally, but have a great deal of difficulty making that effort for ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sherry, the phones are ringing here.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Tom from Oklahoma. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
I was calling about a book by Patricia Garfield. It was called Creative Dreaming. And she talks about how you can retain some of the things that you have dreamt about the night before, some of the details and so forth. And my question is, in awareness practice, would being aware of our dreams be helpful or more of a distraction?
Well, you know, people are really interested in their dreams. And from a Zen perspective, there's not a lot of difference between the dreaming that we're doing when we're lying in our beds at night and the dreaming that we're doing when we're walking around with our eyes wide open during the day. That we can get just as much information from noticing how our conditioned mind operates during the day as from what it does during the night while we're asleep. And it can actually be a little clearer because, generally speaking, the difference between dreaming at night and daydreaming is that at night there is less of an ability to control. In fact, many of us would notice it seems like there is no ability to control where the conditioning sort of leapfrogs along making associations.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas during the day, if you were to start into a fantasy and it became alarming to you, you would jolt yourself out of it. But at night, there's nothing to stop that free association. And so we wind up with things like nightmares. Now, it can be helpful to know what we're dreaming in the sense that it just gives us another clue. But to me, it's not actually worth doing what we need to do to invest the amount of time and energy and attention into getting this information.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have a good evening.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks for calling, Tom. Sherry, it occurred to me as Tom was talking there, I've heard you speak before about disrupting that sleep cycle in some sense to counteract that place that I can go when I'm dreaming.
Yes.
Those conditioned places.
Yes. That we can actually train ourselves to wake up regularly so that we go into a, I hate to use these kinds of words because they don't really point at what I mean, but whatever word I really want is escaping me right now, but a healthy sleep cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Very often what happens is that people will go to sleep and they will just stay in this light dreaming state, which again is not that different from what's going on with us as our conditioned mind is maintaining itself during the day.
Uh-huh.
So often people will report that they wake up in the morning more tired than they were when they went to bed at night.
Yes.
That they don't feel like they ever get really rested. And so if we interrupt those patterns, we have a chance to get to that deep sleep without dreaming state that that enables us to feel rejuvenated in
yes.
the morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's not a sense of conditioning having full rein to run all night?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, if you keep your toaster constantly, you know, with the button pushed down, it's going to burn itself out pretty quickly.
Yes.
And that's a silly analogy, but it's kind of like that. You know, the system needs periods of time not in the pursuit of that, not focused on that conditioning in order for the whole system to relax completely and rest in that connected to life place that that we actually meditate in order to be in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. To disrupt that process of conditioning.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Sherry, I was thinking from the email message earlier, as the writer was talking, I got a sense of what she was projecting onto her child.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like projection comes up an awful lot. And as you know, there's an email class that you're doing right now on that very topic.
Yes. And it's, you know, it really is, projection is the secret weapon in awareness. And I was just doing the class, actually, before the show, and somebody was saying, you know, I know about projection. I've known about projection. I know we're projecting, but that doesn't help me be aware of it when it's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And being aware of projection is kind of like walking around aware of the air that you're breathing.
Hmm.
I mean, certainly, if somebody clamps a hand over your mouth and nose, you realize the absence immediately of,
yes,
of the air that you're breathing.
Yes.
But when we're just walking around, if everything is functioning normally and we're free to move about freely, we don't notice that there's air all around us and that we're breathing it.
Yes.
You know, if it smells bad or if something happens to it, yes, but not under regular circumstances. And projection is exactly that way. I mean, we are creating the world that we are inhabiting on a second-by-second-by-second basis.
Yes.
And people just don't know it. Even when we get it intellectually, it's like conditioned mind is still saying, but it's really true that blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
You know, but I really am seeing that. But that really is the way it works. I'm right about that. Everybody says so.
Yes.
And it's just, it's an amazing thing to try to reel back in. So, you know, what is a mother to do? What are we to do? From the time a child arrives, parents, adults are projecting onto that child.
Yes.
You know, she's unhappy. He doesn't like that. He's this kind of person. She prefers this. She,
mm-hmm,
you know, and the child is 2 months old. You know,
yes,
my favorite is, you know, children really need a schedule.
What? Yes.
Do they? You know, parents really need for children to have a schedule. But do children really need a schedule? And, of course, I can hear the parents out there going, well, but if they don't have a schedule, then they're cranky all the time, and they don't get their naps in, and they're, you know, okay, and we don't like that. But is that the same as children need a schedule? So the projections are just huge and deep and ever-present, and if we can begin to catch on to them, oh, my, what we can begin to free ourselves from in terms of being controlled by our conditioned, socialized ways of thinking, feeling, perceiving, behaving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So when we become aware of those projections, there's a lot to see there.
Oh, I mean, how many people think the world is a scary place?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, it's kind of like, well, if you're paying attention at all, you know the world is a scary place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, actually, that's a projection.
Yes.
And it's a big projection, and a lot of people share it, but that's not the same as it's true.
Right. Right.
If you don't have that conditioning, then the world is not a scary place.
Yes. Yes.
Angry people are threatening. Well, only if you believe that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to save for your old age. Well, you have to save for your old age if you believe that you have to save for your old age, and that something is going to happen to you, and that you don't want to have certain experiences, and if you think money is going to prevent those experiences.
Uh-huh.
But if you don't believe all of that, then no, actually not.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I can't start my own business. You know, the economy is miserable right now, and besides, you know, I'm not that organized, and a lot smarter people than me have tried and failed.
Uh-huh.
Well, those are all projections.
Yes, yes. I have this image of just question marks being plastered
right
everywhere.
Oh, everywhere. When we look out, well,
yes.
How do I know that? Who says so?
Yes.
Why do I think that? Well, that's so beautiful. Well, is it really?
Uh-huh.
I mean, what if I were, you know, from another planet? Would it mm-hmm. be beautiful to me?
Mm-hmm.
I could interview everybody I know. You know, is this beautiful to you? I'd be shocked at the number of people who said, no. No, it's not.
Yes, yes.
So you're right there.
Yes.
And our own children. Oh, my goodness gracious. We're so invested in them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course we're projecting all over them.
Uh-huh.
We can't, many times, devoted parents can't tell the difference between themselves and their children. So they take their children incredibly personally.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, my child is this. And the big smile. You know, this is the right thing for a child to be. My child is that. Oh, big frown. That's not a good thing for a child.
Right, right.
Yeah. What does that have to do with anything real? It just has to do with my conditioning.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca with some great world music. Her program is At the Cafe Bohemian. And then at 8 p.m., we have CW. We're going to take a quick break here. If you'd like to join our conversation, please give us a call at 650-723-9010. We've been talking about projection. And what else have we been talking about, Sherry?
Oh, a lot of things. I was just thinking, you know, I've said some outrageous things this evening. I can't believe those phones aren't ringing off the hook.
Let's get some responses to those outrageous things. Questioning everything.
Everything.
Everything. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We've been talking today about projection, and we'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 650-723-9010. Sherry, the other thing that occurred to me when I was reading that email from the listener in Australia, and you pointed this out, the run-on sentences that have lots of different beliefs in them.
Yeah.
And the thing that came up was the duality around that.
Uh-huh.
And so she's in a place of, you know, do I do this, which is the right thing, or this, which is the wrong thing?
Or is that the right thing?
Or is this the right thing?
What if that's the wrong thing?
Yes.
What if the right thing is something that I'm missing altogether?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When we were on our break, I was thinking, I was just wondering, because so we live in this assumption that there's an objective reality, that there's a that there is truth, that there is what's real, and
mm-hmm.
and that we all intelligent, informed people would agree on certain things. And I wondered if there was anything that everybody would agree upon.
Yes.
You know, I wonder if there's anything that even most people would agree upon.
Yes. Yes.
Isn't that something? And yet, we still hold this emotional belief that there's a right way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sherry, that reminds me of you talking about how we pick people to be in our lives who, in a sense, share the same beliefs or the same projections.
Yeah, and that's the one that just just gets people going. In fact, I was talking to somebody in the email class who said, now, I had this situation. I was working in this place, and I was working with this person, and then I left, and my friend went to work and worked with this person, and my friend says the same thing about this person that I do. I go, well, yeah, and that's why that person is your friend and not
yes.
the other person's friend.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But we look around at all the people in our lives who seem really different to us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you think about all the people in your life, my goodness, what a diverse group of people we have there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they're not. But, you know, if they were actually different, we've gotten rid of them because because they would be scary, threatening, dangerous. You know, as far out as we can get with, well, I have this person who's unlike anybody else in my life. That's right. And still within the circle of acceptable ways for a human being to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so we all, different as we are, agree on that, you know, Joe is a jerk. So, you know, Joe must be a jerk, right? Because we all think that.
Yes.
And I just laugh because, of course, you know, I'm reading hundreds of emails that people are sending in about, you know, what they think about different people. And, you know, just the ones that think this person is just the worst. And then there's this other whole group that thinks the same person is the best. And I wish we could get it.
Yes.
You know, I wish we could really get projection.
Uh-huh.
The world would be such a different place.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, we would not be going around calling people evil.
Uh-huh.
We just wouldn't.
Yes.
We wouldn't be calling people a lot of things that we call people.
Uh-huh.
Once we understood that, no, that is my experience. And where is that experience coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Inside me.
Mm-hmm. So I have an experience of evil, and I find an appropriate person to put that on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe that evil
it's
is coming from
me.
That person.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or I find somebody who's wonderful.
Uh-huh.
And I project all of my wonderfulness onto that person, and I really believe it's them and not me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we have experiences like actually meeting somebody that we think is wonderful. And then in a conversation, they make it clear that they don't think they're wonderful.
Uh-huh.
It's like, how is this possible? How could you not see that you're perfect?
Yes, yes.
So sometimes you can even get two people, because they've just fallen in love, who each of them is projecting that the other is perfect, but
mm-hmm.
they don't feel they themselves are perfect. Well, how does that work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've taken the part of them that they see as perfect, projected it out onto the other person, and here's the beauty of it. So I project the part of me who is perfect that I operate out of 1% of the time in my conditioned view, okay?
Yes.
And I project that out onto that other person who clearly is that way 100% of the time.
Yes.
Now that person says, okay, well, yeah, I can understand. I have a part of myself that I think is perfect, but I only operate out of that 2% of the time. But you're operating out of it 100% of the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's no sense that, you know, how we are changes from moment to moment, and
yes.
Yes.
And so most people are constantly looking at themselves through one filter and everybody else through another filter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Sherry,
I check in, I look at you, were you going to say something?
Yeah, follow up that thought, and then I'll go where I was going.
Okay. So I look at you and I say, you know, you're a really angry person. Or a really emotional person,
mm-hmm.
although the email. You're a really angry person. And so yes, I know I'm angry, but I'm hardly ever angry, and certainly not the way you are.
Mm-hmm.
So we confuse ourselves, because all that's happening is in this moment and in every moment that I project that onto you, I am going to that anger inside myself, that place of anger, because it's as simple as I look at you and say, what is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's being angry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? How do I know that? Because if I were doing that, I would be angry.
Yes.
Okay? And I just completely lose sight of the fact that I actually don't know what's going on with you at all. I only know that you look to me like my image of anger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have a question here that a listener just called in with. If we question everything, including our values, isn't there some basic underlying value system we should maintain, something that doesn't vary?
Why? Why would we want to do that? You know, I mean, I'm not laughing because I'm making light of the question, because,
yes.
I mean, it's a huge question for just about everybody.
Yes.
But if we consider what we actually know to be true, or what we believe to be true based on modern science, which heaven knows we worship in this part of the world.
Yes.
Everything in the universe is different every split second. We can't even make a small enough measurement to capture the every during which everything in the universe is different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the best, in my experience, the best we can do is try to get an intellectual understanding of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, essentially, here we are with absolutely nothing to hold on to.
Yes.
Because it's all different.
Yes.
We're different. It's different. They're different. It's all different. In fact, once we catch on to this, we realize what a gross level of perception we need to be operating out of not to notice this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we get together with a friend after, you know, a few years and go, oh, he's getting old. Or, whoa, you know, she's put on a few pounds.
Uh-huh.
And it's like it just happened.
Yes.
Okay? I mean, we can have that experience of somebody getting old or putting on pounds, and we see them every day.
Yes.
Only one day we go, whoa, you know, you've really changed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't happen last night.
Uh-huh.
It's been going on a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little
yes.
bit, a little bit, moment by moment by moment.
Yes.
So the fact that we're not attending to this, the fact that we're missing this constant change, doesn't mean it isn't happening.
Uh-huh.
So what is the point of holding on to anything?
Yes.
You know, it seems to the identity like, well, then you just cut loose. You're just free-floating out there in the universe somewhere. But it's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is any different.
Mm-hmm.
I've never known what was going to happen. I've never known what is happening. Forget the future. I don't know what's happening right now.
Yes.
Do you know?
Yes.
And so there's really nothing to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing is any different than it's always been. And so I have nothing to hold on to. Well, it's always been that way, and I've been just fine. And when I haven't felt like I was just fine, I had no control over any of those things that I thought were not fine.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
What good does it do for me to try to become a fixed point
yes.
in an ever-changing universe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just makes me unhappy when trying to be a fixed point doesn't work.
Yes, yes. And it seems like that's a key piece of the projection, is that there's a label placed on, and it's assumed that there's a fixed point, something unchanging.
Yeah.
And there's no recognition. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Failing to notice that there has not been a fixed me for two consecutive moments since I've been able to perceive myself.
Yes. Yes.
I'm just this constantly changing mass of sensations and thoughts and feelings and perceptions and awarenesses
mm-hmm.
and memories and constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the me in that?
Mm-hmm.
The me is just a belief.
Mm-hmm.
It's assumed. There must be something constant there.
Because mm-hmm.
I still call myself me.
Mm-hmm.
But your doctor, your local scientist would say, no, in fact, every 7 years, is that what it is?
I think that's right.
Every 7 years, every cell in your body is different.
Yes.
All we have yes. to do is look in the mirror.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sherry, the phones are still ringing here.
Good.
All right.
That's why we do this, you know.
That's, yeah.
Because otherwise, you and I could just get together and chat about this stuff.
Yes,
yeah,
which I enjoy.
It's nice to have them join us.
Absolutely. You say something provocative, and then the phones come on. All right. I'd like to welcome Georgia from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Good evening.
Oh, I thought you were still talking to someone else.
We're talking to you.
Oh, okay. I think what you're talking about right now relates to what I'm calling about, but I have no idea how.
Okay.
Well,
you put it out there. It's my job to figure out how they go together.
It's a specific thing that happens with my mother when we talk on the phone, and she's in another state, and we had a very difficult relationship, and it went on and has gone on for a long time with things getting better as we've both gotten older. But she still really, really annoys me. And I can't seem to, I think I have let go of something, and then it's back. And I haven't let go of it. And it's like then I'm annoyed at being annoyed.
Oh, absolutely. Because you should have gone beyond that by now.
Totally.
Yeah, you let that go
that
after
is the
all.
Goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then things get compounded because she will usually say at the end of the conversation, "I love you." And then it's like that's my cue to respond in kind. And I feel I usually do, but I'm angry, and if I don't, I feel guilty.
Right, you feel manipulated by
very manipulated.
Uh-huh.
Which I was most of my life.
Uh-huh.
So
let me ask you this. How much of this do you think your mother is on to?
None. Oh, no. I've tried my whole life to try to have things talked about and my point of view expressed. No. No. And that's been
hard. So if you were to say, I would love to say I love you, but right now I'm so annoyed I find I am unwilling to do that.
Did you say that to her?
What would happen? I'm not suggesting that. I'm asking you what would happen.
What would happen? She'd be very, a couple of things. She'd be very offended and hang up. She'd be shocked because we just had, quote, a nice conversation. So where did that come from?
Uh-huh.
I just...
And so let me ask you this. Do you feel comfortable saying the kind of thing she might say that you find so annoying?
Meaning what?
Well, you're going along in the conversation, she says something, and you get really annoyed. What might she have said?
I'm sorry, I'm not following. Are we just meaning about in general when we talk?
Yeah, yeah. Just your average annoying phone call.
I have learned to be with, okay. I mean, I have conversations with her, and sometimes it's fine.
But if you had that reaction arise,
uh-huh.
What would elicit that reaction?
Well, she's talking about something I have no interest in, which she can do. And,
uh-huh.
And even though she's known for years, I'm not interested in it.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, no one's home,
So you want her to be more sensitive to you than she is?
Yes, but I'm laughing because I know, I really do know, I know certainly in my mind, sometimes in my heart, it's not going to happen. She's just not capable.
Uh-huh. Now, is she talking about something that's of interest to her?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So basically, you two have the same motivation.
Uh-huh.
You both want to talk about what's interesting
yes.
to you and have the other person interested.
Totally. Yes.
But she wins the game.
Yes.
Although you don't know that because mm-hmm. you could be talking about things that are interesting to you.
I think I do.
And she's bored to tears.
Yeah, I'm sure that's happening. I know it's happening.
Uh-huh.
At times.
Uh-huh. But if she's annoyed, she doesn't let you know.
No.
Okay.
She very occasionally, when she's really annoyed, will just literally stop talking. It's just silence.
Uh-huh.
That's her way of telling me, I'm not happy, I'm displeased.
Uh-huh. Have you tried that technique on her?
Yeah, but not often. Huh, I just thought of that. Not very, no, and I don't think about that as an option.
Uh-huh.
I guess a few times I was so centered when I've talked with her that I have.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what I'm talking about here is not to suggest mm-hmm. alternative behaviors.
Right.
But just to have a level of disidentification, you know, a level of stepped back from this, centered, not taking it seriously.
While I'm talking to her.
While you're talking
mm-hmm.
to her.
Mm-hmm.
So that you don't get caught being the wrong person at the right time.
Right.
So by that I mean, do you have a sense of how old the person is who gets annoyed with her mother?
Oh, sure, I'm a little girl.
Uh-huh.
And it's still...
About how
still,
old?
It's like the same. Oh, I'd say 10, 11, 12.
Yeah, 13. Preteen.
Yeah.
Preteen. The teenager would act out. The preteen would just roll her eyes.
So
and,
true.
And just wish that this boring
yes,
person would shut
that
up.
That was something I've always been... critical of myself that I never rebelled.
Uh-huh.
You just really...
It,
I'm
but
doing
you're
the same
learning.
Thing.
you're learning it's never too late to rebel, right? Yeah.
I don't know that I'm doing it, but...
Well, inside you are. Probably in exactly the way you did it all along.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So you don't confront her.
Right.
So you don't have to deal with it.
Exactly. Because I know she's just going to be like a blank to me.
Yeah.
I just can't. Yeah. I don't want to go again after trying for so long to have her different. And she's not.
Right. And you know what, Georgia? You aren't either.
I'm not. I thought
right?
I really was.
I know. But when we get back with Mom or Dad, guess what?
Oh.
We turn right into the same little children we were when the whole thing happened
but
the first time around.
People do change with their parents. I mean,
yes. And here's my encouragement to you.
Thanks.
Next time you talk to Mom,
uh-huh.
If you have pictures of you when you were 10, 11, 12, and when you were a teenager,
uh-huh.
put those gals up in front of you when you're talking.
Okay.
And when one of them starts to take over, just say quietly to them, don't say it out loud, your mother will think you've lost your mind, just say, it's okay, I'm having this conversation.
Uh-huh.
Take yourself right back to that centered place.
Huh.
And then when you get off the phone, if those gals have anything to say to you,
mm-hmm.
let them talk to you.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, because you're the one who really needs to hear it, not your mom.
Really? Oh, God.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that way you get to really be different.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. That is great.
Good. Well, let
Thank
us know what
you.
Happened, okay?
I will.
All right.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Georgia. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're coming up to the end of our show here. Sherry reminded me when Georgia was talking of the first email and the idea of bringing everything back to ourselves.
Yes.
Which is where we are with projection.
Yeah, yeah, and it's so important. The thing, of course, that the person with the email was struggling with, you know, Georgia knows her mother's fine. She's been, she's been making it all of her life. She may be annoying on occasion from Georgia's, preteen or teen point of view.
Yes.
The mother has such a different set of projections to struggle with, the mother of the email conversation, because this is a child.
Yes.
You know, it's not like, okay, well, I can just deal with my projections and, it is like that. It's absolutely like that. But it's so much harder to see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I need to own all of my projections. I need to deal with all of this fear of inadequacy and something is going to go wrong and I'm going to make a mistake and I'm going to ruin this forever. I need to deal with all of that so that I can be as clear as possible and as centered as possible when I'm interacting with my child. Yeah,
yes.
So you're right. It's the same for all of us all the time, whatever the circumstances are. I'm responsible for taking care of all of the unfinished stuff in me so that I can be as centered as possible when I'm interacting with others so that I don't project all of this unfinished suffering and misery out onto other people.
Mm-hmm.
Inflict it on them, we might say. Yeah, it's a gift. It's a gift that we can give to ourselves, one another, the world. You know, we want the world to be a different, better place. Well,
it's a good place to start.
It's a good place to start. Yeah.
Great.
Great talking with you.
Great talking with you.
Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. What do you say, in a week?
About a week. About 5 o'clock on Tuesday night.
Yeah, a week minus 1 hour.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to thank all of our callers and listeners and emailers as well today. I'd like to thank Lori and Jay for the superb engineering work. Archives of today's show and all shows are available at sherryhuber.com. That's C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. If people want to reach us in the meantime, you can send us an email at openair@kzsu.org. Coming up now, we have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian. And then at 8 p.m. we have CW. Thanks, Sherry, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.